And a very good morning to you too. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is, as you know, the audio diary of my life behind the scenes of a YouTube creator and soon to be an author once the book's published, and entertainer, and, well, whatever else I am. Yes, you can keep those thoughts to your head. Right, it is the 19th, I think, today. And I have a chap coming called Tom to the house later on this morning to, he's a motor mechanic, a mobile motor mechanic, to go and sort out my brake fluid and my coolant fluid, which I was told by the garage that needed changing. But for them to do it, it was going to cost an arm and a leg. And this chap will do it for half the price, which is marvellous. I also want him to have a quick look at my brakes and pads if he can. Not to actually do the work, because I haven't asked him to do that, and it's probably he's probably got a diary of things to do. But just want to get some advice from him on that, because I no longer trust the garage, as I think I did a thing the other day. They've just got too big now, and I think they're a bit money grabbing. So fair enough, you know, you move on with the times and you find other people who will do the bits and pieces that you need doing. Fair enough. So that's that. It's about 7 o'clock today and it's another grey day. I'm just trying to move, find some space to sit. It's another grey and cooler day today. We had a blistering hot day the other day, but it's a lot cooler now. Which is quite refreshing, really. Yesterday I was supposed to be doing some writing, but didn't get round to that. There were so many other bits and pieces to catch up with, which I did, and not least was looking for some wood. One of the little plans I want to do, and I know this is going to sound a bit bonkers, but I have seen other people do it now, is to create a compost loo in the house, so that one can capture human waste and take it down to, when we're on the land, to our compost heap that we shall build, and create the manure part of it. I did actually speak to both Mark and John yesterday about cow manure and sourcing some of that. We want it grass-fed, organic, non-vaccinated manure, so that it can go into the compost with the grass and the brown wood leaves, etc., to make up a mix and let that compost down till it's ready, and then that can go on to the vegetable patch, and whatever else, wherever else we're going to grow food. We've got soil to create and lots of it, so that's part of the plan. On the farm, or the farming land that we aim to do. And it all takes time, it's not going to happen overnight, but we can grow some vegetables, I imagine, relatively speedily. Well, certainly next year, anyway, if we can get our veg patch area sorted out, and the polytunnel, a greenhouse, you know, all of the necessary things that you're going to need, get those sorted. So I was doing more finding out and research and what have you. You can buy compost and you can buy it, but I learnt yesterday that you can't just buy this compost and you shove your down and you shove your plants into it, that you mix it. Because if you just put it straight on, it's too rich for the plants. I guess it depends on the mix that you're buying, I suppose. Some people may sell you the mix. Well, if you've got enough other stuff to mix in with it, then that would be ideal, really. So I think we'll have plenty of stuff to add to it. There's all of that to do. So where am I going with all of that? I can't remember now. So compost, I was talking about that human waste. And a human compost bin. So I was looking at some wood yesterday over at the woodyard in their spare bits. And they didn't have anything really suitable to make one. And then the question is, where would you put it? Well, I thought I could put it under the stairs. And really and truly, it would be for number twos to collect with wood chip and a little bit of number one, but mostly all number ones. If they were just number ones on their own, they could just carry on being, you know, in the ordinary toilet. Otherwise, it'll be too liquidy. I don't want it too liquidy. And then each day, well, at the end of each day, or at the end of the week, I suppose. Apparently, it's not supposed to stink if you use wood chip. Sawdust. If you use sawdust, it doesn't smell. This is what I'm told. I'd soon find out. If it honked, that would be a different matter. And then you store it in effectively something like a wheelie bin, and you gather it up, and then you leave it for 6 months. And after 6 months, it's done its own stuff. And so, yeah. Anyway, it's something to think about, because I want to make sure we can gather enough manure, and we create manure, and we just flush it away. So I think that would be a sensible thing. And on the land, of course, we will build ourselves a compost loo, one there, because, again, that would be a very useful thing to do. And then if we can... The other thing I found, because I've got this pile of... little pile of collection of wood that I collected up years ago, about 5 years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago, at the edge of my... between the house and the shed. And in that little gap, I just put these old rafters and planks and various bits of wood, which I was using at that time before I'd found a good source of logs to light the Essie. And once I found my source of logs, of course, I didn't need to keep sawing up these old timber beams. My neighbour had his roof done, and I asked when they took out the old timber beams from that, if I could have them, and they said, yeah, it saves us filling up the skip. So I've had some of those, and of course the trouble is, it was about six years ago, and they've rotted. Where they've got wet, the wind and the rain and what have you's got at them, and then they dry out and more rain and what have you. So many of them are rotted, which was a shame. But in amongst that pile, I was looking for some planks which would make a suitable bench to put the seeds and the pots and various things for the polytunnel, you see. So the polytunnel, or a greenhouse, whichever, you know, whichever works. So you've got a little bench area. Anyway, I thought that would be quite useful. So it's this thing about gathering everything up together so that we've got stuff to work with as quickly as we can. And I also found an extra downpipe and guttering. And I thought, that'd be useful, because we could get that on some structure. And so the water hits the roof, hits into the gutter, goes down the downpipe, and then goes into a water butt. So we'll need to get some water butts to collect the water in and see. And then, of course, we need to get somebody to douse the land and see if there is water in there, and then make a decision whether we're going to dig a hole to see excuse me, if there is some form of spring underneath, which would be very exciting, but probably take a bit of time to dig a hole. And then, are we digging it in the right place? Well, that's where the dowsing comes in, isn't it? We will see. So yes, a lot of preparation stuff. So I didn't get round to doing catching up with the writing, and I haven't written. This is the pipe book that I wanted to crack on with. Then I had an email from jolly old Liz Phillips, who said, are you doing the Great Resist in Hereford, I think it is? And that we said, no, we're at the Barbara O'Neill event on that particular date, whenever it is. And so she said, oh, is there any chance I could do a video? And I said, yeah, no problem at all. So that's in a month's time anyway, so there's no pressure to think about it. But yeah, that's coming up in a month's time, which will be a nice go up there. And then I think we're off to the weekend Truther Festival very soon as well. So there's lots going on at the moment, and just waiting for the solicitors now to get to do their thing. One day is just lending into another, and wondering if we're any closer to getting to the exchange. These things, I mean, it just seems to be rattling on forever now. And I thought, well, what is there to do? You've only got to say, you want to buy this, you want to buy that. Here's the money, here's the signature, done. But it does seem that these things just take forever, which is very frustrating, because we want to get on and we want to get making some videos and demonstrating and learning and getting on with the old farming bit, if we can. Now, I thought I was sent this book, The Old Country, by Jack Hargreaves. You may remember him from, I think The Old Country was one of them, and Down Your Way, I think, was another of his episodes. So I thought I'd just read a little bit today. I used to enjoy reading bits. So this is a little bit at random. Chapter 3. The walnut tree. It says, before long, said my television friend, you'll be able to watch 24 channels. This was back in the 1970s, I suppose. But it's crazy to devote all those resources to 24 television channels. Ah, well, he said, you can't stop progress. Well, I'm not sure it was progress. I think it was just a way of dumbing us all down, but never mind. It is difficult to decide when it first occurred to me to man that he could master the whole physical world. I think it must have been quite recently, because the idea never reached grandfather. He didn't set out to conquer nature, but felt himself to be in a mutually respectful partnership. If he sent us out to put up a line of barbed wire to keep the cattle out of a hedge, he would never have a nail driven into a tree. Quite right. If an oak tree stood in the way of the line, we had to put two extra posts out of line to get round it. No nails in trees. Quite right. He wanted everything that he did to the landscape to be done perfectly. After a field was ploughed, he would send us out with a garden spade to dig the corners where the plough couldn't get in. In the old man's view, grandfather wasted a lot of time fiddling with things that didn't contribute to profit. After all, where the plough couldn't go, and the drill and the binder couldn't go either, and such little corn grew in the corners and went to the pigeons and the flocks of finches. Well, that was all right with grandfather. Once a wild foxglove seeded itself in the bank below one of the hedges. It was a place from which water would naturally drain away, and the season it grew there turned into a drought. The season that grew there. Every day for a fortnight, he carried a bucket of water over from the yard and gave it a soaking. Grandfather loved foxgloves, whose proper home was in the woods. The old man's heart was in the grazings, but grandfather was really a man of the woods. Even in our small woodland, there were so many things that needed to be done right. The most obviously orderly thing that happened in the woods was the coppicing. That's how we said it, though coppicing is the way it often got spelt. A copse is a plantation in which particular species are harvested, not as full-grown timber, but at the sapling stage, anything from 3 to 8 or 10 years old. The copsewood served 100 uses in country life, and the maximum crop of it was achieved by stooling the roots. Planted just a few yards apart, and when they had grown their first sapling stems, cut down to the ground. From the root came a bunch of several stems, and as these grew, they were cut in successive years. The root of the stool became lumpy and mature, until each stool would yield 50 or more stems. The copsing species were the hazel above all, and secondary ash, chestnut sometimes, and where the wood was damp, a few stools of alder. Some birches were stooled for broom makers. There were willow copses down by the river, and these were cut annually by the basket makers, so they grew rods by the score, and in winter, when the bark was red, it could look like a crowd of pink hairdos. With us, the stools were not separate copses, as they are in some districts, but formed the underwood of the old-fashioned mixed woodland. By that I do not mean a mixture of broadleafs and conifers. The top timber trees were oak and beech, with a few sycamores and Spanish chestnut that were grown big to be planted by great-uncle Harry. He was a master woodworker, and his tradition in the family was as strong as the farming one. On small farms, where one son can take over, there is usually another craft to be inherited. On mother's side, there were farmers and weavers. My uncle Alfred Jubb had risen to be a tackler, which is what top master weaver was then called. How interesting, isn't it? It's fascinating, old times. And we used to go walking on our Bald Explorer videos through many copses, and we would see the coppicing going on. And you'd go through a chestnut one, Spanish chestnut, I suppose it must have been. And you see those up near Fittleworth on the estate there, whatever it was called. Can't remember the name of the estate, but up near Fittleworth, they have, as I remember now, they have, a scab on my ear when I cut myself shaving this morning. They have chestnut there. But then if you go into, I think it's the Amring Estate, which is just to the west of Worthing, really. There's another copse there, a lot of copsing going on in their woodland. And I think that's hazel. But often you'll see interspersed with all of that some oak or birch, as he said. So it's interesting what they did. I didn't know they made broom handles from birch. When great-uncle Harry was first a journeyman, he put his tools on the back of a black pony and walked off in the company of a little running dog called Fly. Like Jude, the obscure, he was a true journeyman. At last he found himself needed in Lincoln, where he worked for a long time on the altar screen in the cathedral. In honour of Harry and his predecessors, he grew at each of the corners of our woodland, planted there perhaps because of they needed light, a group of box trees. Most people know box only as a material for little clipped hedges and topiary bushes, but these were of a small timber size, large enough for one of the lower branches to be turned by Harry into a polished wooden spill jar. Many times I filled it for Grandfather, folding the long spills that he poked in the fire to light his pipe from the pages of Farm, Field and Fireside. The home-grown boxwood was used for the block planes that my great-uncle made for himself, for rulers, squares, and the handles of chisels that he endlessly sharpened. Harry used to say that for every 10 men that could use a tool, only one could put a perfect edge on it.
Oh.
All his beautiful tools were kept in a chest he had built himself, which, having no family of his own, he said, was coming to me. However, my Uncle Willie, who was somewhat over-dapper chap, who waxed his moustaches. Why do they say moustaches are plural? I thought it was a moustache, but, or moustache, is it? But they always put it plural. He waxed his moustaches. sneaked it away when he emigrated to America. This is the box. I never saw him again, unlike my uncle Holmes, who had gone back to Canada. As soon as war broke out, he came back to join up. He died just after dawn on the first day of the Battle of Somme, his first day in action. That's very sad, isn't it? That's very sad. Last paragraph I'm going to read. Uncle Willie didn't come back. He was in the Fall River City, Massachusetts, sitting on my box. Mother said I ought to forgive him, and I suspect she had colluded in order to help him on his way in the New World. But although he took our other tradition to America, I always hoped he didn't encounter too much prosperity. Oh, charming. Anyway, that was quite interesting, wasn't it? But it's called The Walnut Tree, and we haven't actually got to The Walnut Tree, so maybe we'll read that another day. But I hope you found that a bit interesting, a bit more interesting than me prattling on about compost loos. And now I've got blood coming out my ear where I picked the scab, which is a bit irritating. Anyway, there we go. Thank you so much for listening, if you did. A bit random today, but then they always are, aren't they? It's these early morning days. And it's a bit of a grey sky and the nose is a bit bunged up. I do think they've been spraying yet again. Yes, we know. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening. Toodle-pip.